Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. If you've ever wondered what happened to those oldie but goodie expressions of yesteryear, don't be an afternoon farmer. Today's your show. We're going to run down some expressions like, I wouldn't do that for all the tea in China, and, oh, horse feathers, and, those pearls are fake, sure as eggs is eggs. We have an excellent guide today. Leslie Bloom is the author of a new book, Let's Bring Back the Lost Language Edition. This is a collection of forgotten yet delightful words, phrases, praises, and insults from eras past. Leslie Bloom covers culture, media, politics, and fashion. Her work has appeared in Vanity Fair, Vogue, Slate, and The Daily Beast. She's working on her first major biography detailing Ernest Hemingway's early years in Paris. Leslie Bloom joins us this morning from NPR's New York studios. Leslie, good morning. So nice to have you.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be with you.
Well, I like the point you made very early in this book when you pointed out that outdated fashion trends often make comebacks in our society, you know, togas being a prime example from my college days. But once words and certain phrases are relegated to the dustbins of history, look out, they're often gone forever. Why is that?
You know, it's so hard to say, you know, why some phrases become unfashionable and why other ones stay in circulation for perpetuity. I mean, people have been saying, you know, getting out of the wrong side of the bed for literally hundreds of years. But then, you know, other you know, perfectly delightful words and phrases just seem to go into the ether. And I think, you know, words, like any other trendy thing, you know, they denote a period of time.
Yes.
And then they become passé because they show that maybe you are stuck in time. Like, so for instance, if we said, you know, oh, that's really groovy or far out today, I mean, I think that we would get, you know, the stink eye from somebody. And so it's just, I think that it's just a question of, you know, action, reaction. You know, people always want, you know, the newest, best thing, and that means leaving other things behind. So my mission with this book, because I love language, and I read a lot of historical fiction and nonfiction, and I'm always in, you know, libraries and archives, is to bring back some of the unjustly discarded idioms and phrases and words and insults and praises from bygone eras that deserve to be revisited, if not resurrected.
Well, one thing that strikes you going through your book is this notion that a lot of those old expressions had tons of color. You know, we've seemed to have repeatedly substituted colorful for bland, at least as my sense of it is, as time has gone on. Why have we done that?
I don't know. I mean, it's a failing on our part.
Yes.
I mean, I think I feel like, you know, expression in the past used to be really quite fun and highly individualistic. And the whole point was to, you know, a lot of slang was to just be intensely clever and funny and illustrative. And, you know, I mean, the whole time, every time I would uncover a new phrase, new slash old phrase, you know, for the pages of this book, I would just, you know, hoot with laughter. So I really don't know the answer to that. But I think that, you know, the good thing is that all of these words are out there for us to rediscover. And so instead of saying something like is, you know, nonsensical, just say, oh, you know, nonsense, or, you know, you have, you know, a whole roster of completely ridiculous words that mean nonsense from the past. I mean, you can say that's claptrap, that's fiddle faddle, that's twaddle, that's rimble ramble. You know, and that's, you know, that's actually another thing. I mean, in the past, a lot of words that were invented, you know, very colorful slang, really sounded like what it meant. So, you know, when somebody said something to you and you were surprised and you said, zounds, you know, I mean, it really sounds like sounds. I mean, there's no mistaking what it meant.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what you said a minute ago about why some of these expressions fade was just spot on. You know, over the weekend, I tried out a couple of these expressions on my teenage boys.
Like, how did that go?
Well, not well. Like, oh, horse feathers. And what struck me about the reaction was, you know, I guess there was some disdain in their voices because the expressions were clearly old-fashioned. It wasn't hip, and they were making fun of it pretty quickly instead of trying it on to see how how it actually fit. I guess what you just said really makes sense, that when these things do fade, it does date you quite a bit to resurrect them, and it makes you feel old instead of something new and cutting very quickly.
Well, I will say this, though. You know, one of the reasons why I chose to do a volume of my Let's Bring Back series devoted to language, because Let's Bring Back My first Let's Bring Back book was a general encyclopedia of fashions, foods, personalities, landmarks, and some words from bygone eras that had been forgotten and that should be brought back. And, you know, it occurred to me that out of, you know, all of those different realms that I just talked about, language was the one place, again, where, you know, there isn't that high resurrection value. But it seems like it's the last frontier in a way where there, you know, where it, there hasn't been some kind of a comeback chic, I guess. And so, you know, where I live in New York, I mean, everybody's wearing fedoras again. You can't get a gin and tonic without it being served to you by a guy with a handlebar mustache. you know, I mean, all things, you know, old or new again, except for in language. And I'm really willing to bet that it's the next thing, the next big thing. I mean, to be seen as hip, you know, is to resurrect some of these old words and phrases. And you know,
that would certainly help book sales, wouldn't it, Leslie?
I think so. and also it would help us, you know, distinguish ourselves, you know, expression-wise. And, you know, I feel like, you know, contemporary language, it really isn't about being creatively expressive. It's really very homogenized. And it's also so abbreviated. I mean, we've adopted text messaging as, you know, as our way of communicating, but even when we're talking. So, I mean, you could be in an actual conversation with somebody right now, and instead of saying, oh, that's a hoot, or that's a gasser, or how uproarious, you would say, LOL, you know, and it's such a homogenized way of speaking. So, you know, as with everything, you know, I'm sure that there will be some sort of backlash against those kinds of ways of expressing oneself. And, you know, there, again, I think people will discover that there are a lot of really totally delightful words from the past that can be called on again to resurrect and to help distinguish yourself from these very digital minded masses.
Leslie Bloom is our guest. She was last on our show on Election Day 2012 talking about Let's Bring Back, her cocktail edition. We're talking about her lost language edition. This is a collection of forgotten yet delightful words, phrases and praises, insults and idioms, and literary flourishes from eras past. And if you've got an old expression you want to trot out and see what Leslie thinks of it, perhaps she's included it in her book. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Our email address, UpToDate@kcur.org, or you can also tweet us at @KCURUpToDate. You know, this expression that I used in the intro of the show, those pearls are fake, sure as eggs is eggs. What's that one about?
Well, you know, eggs is eggs. It's an example of, in many ways, how many phrases came from when we were a more agrarian society. Mm-hmm. So a lot of old phrases and words that, you know, I brought back for this book, I would say probably maybe a third of them have those kind of farmland roots. And so sure as eggs is eggs, it just means, you know, well, you know, most assuredly, you know, and
eggs are,
you know,
eggs, and that's what we're talking about here. Yeah.
Right. And I just love that it's just such plain speaking.
Yes.
And farm,
yes,
you know, farms, you know, talk is such plain speaking also. And it's just, you know, lays it on the line. It's blunt. And, you know, it's like, you know, you could just see somebody in the old days fixing someone with a little lie and saying that man's a liar. Sure as eggs is eggs. But, you know, again, I really, one of the things I loved and it was seeing how, again, how nature-oriented, weather-oriented, pastoral, bucolic, you know, a lot of the words from the past were, and how much they still express really things really perfectly,
yes,
even in a society,
yes,
that's, you know, increasingly suburban and urban.
Well, speaking of the rural roots of so many of these expressions, here's one of my favorites. That guy is all hat and no cattle.
Love that one.
I do too. I just love it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's an old Texan term, of course.
You sort of hear it once in a while. It still has a little bit of life to it, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and that's actually an important point that I'd like to make about the words and phrases that I've included in this book. I mean, not all of them are totally lost.
Yes.
I mean, some of them are just delightful and old-fashioned. And I worry for them, you know, again, because of what I see, what happens, you know, what's happening with, you know, the trends in our own language and expression. And I don't want them to go away. You know,
mm-hmm,
I want to celebrate them, mm-hmm, and to make sure that the next generation and my generation realizes that these are hip, wonderful ways, you know, to express yourself and keep them going. So, you know, all hat and no cattle is, you know, an example of that. And it means, you know, for anybody who doesn't know, someone who boasts about himself without any evidence of, any evidence of the professed accomplishments, you know. So he claims to be quite a ladies' man, but he's all hat and no cattle.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And I just absolutely love that one. It's just one of my absolute favorites. Well, the phone calls are pouring in here, Leslie. You might not be surprised. 816-235-2888 is our phone number again. UpToDate at kcur.org is the email address. You can also tweet us at kcur, UpToDate. Let's go to some calls here. And Brad from Prairie Village, you're on with Leslie Bloom. Brad, good morning.
Hi there. I have a daughter that works in the Ren Fest, so whenever things go well, at like paying for something, I will go huzzah.
The Renaissance Festival you're talking about, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, I was at Penn Valley, and we were talking about the racist covenants in the Missouri Constitution, and I brought up the word octoroon and just about got tarred and feathered.
I've never heard octoroon before, Brad. Help me with it.
Yeah, tell us more.
An octoroon was the legal term for determining if someone was one-eighth black or less, I believe, and determined if their racial status.
Oh, that's interesting.
Interesting. I mean, it's very interesting. I mean, there's a lot of vocabulary like that out there that, you know, I came across in slang dictionaries and other old-fashioned medical dictionaries and that kind of thing when I was researching the book, and it was pretty shocking. huzzah is one of my great favorites, and I didn't know about huzzah actually until I'm a huge fan of the former HBO series Deadwood, and huzzah is regularly uttered, and it's usually said when somebody's flipping a hat into the air over somebody. Usually, it's because somebody that they've hated has been shot.
of course,
some kind of horrible thing has befallen somebody else, and but I really love that term too, and that actually is in the book.
Okay, and just be warned that. Using the term octoroon is about like dropping the N-word. It is not socially accepted.
Okay,
well, that can
Brad.
Be part of my next series, Do Not Bring Back.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's not bring back.
Brad, thank you for the call.
Okay, thanks, bye.
All this raises a question, Leslie. How did you find the phrases that you included in the book?
Oh, it was a really fun process. And, for 3 or 4 years, I had a little notebook, which I carried around with me everywhere. And, anytime I would hear, or read something or see something in a film or a play, and it was, something delightful and old fashioned, I would jot it down. And then I went into serious research also, and I found a lot of old slang dictionaries, from the 1600s through the present, and just had the most wonderful time culling them. But I wasn't. This wasn't a snobbish book in its approach, and there are a lot of really wonderful and more academic, comprehensive slang dictionaries. Like there's one out there right now that somebody wrote, and it took him 30 years to write. This is not, the all-encompassing history of colorful expression. It's a more idiosyncratic collection. It's my favorites of what I came across, but. To be honest, Mae West films, were as, as juicy a source of material as, Shakespeare's plays.
A deep depository
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could look at, flip through a ladies magazine from the 1950s and an ad for a can of peas would have some delightful word in it. So, I mean, the words and phrases came from all different places, and I also really surveyed a lot of my friends in the literary and journalism communities because they're privy to such wonderful ways of expressing themselves and asked experts, asked friends, and it was just this totally joyous process creating this collection.
I'm a graduate of the University of Wisconsin at Madison, and they had a guy up there named Frederick Cassidy, who was the editor of this series of regional phrases and idioms, from days gone by. And they spent decades on that project, and I think they just completed it a few years ago. But again, there's such great interest in all this stuff that it caused him to spend literally decades of his life tracking this stuff down all over the country.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my book, which is, 230 pages long, it could have been, 80 times as long. And, just calling out material was very painful. It was like, cutting an old friend from a party list, it's just fascinating because when you're uncovering older language, it's really a prism of looking at a certain community at a certain point in time. I mean, you're walking back through history and you're looking at how people lived and what they thought about and, you know, what a lot of people, you know, thought about, you know, and how that would infiltrate into how they expressed themselves. And it just, you know, belies so much about different time periods. So it just was a wonderful vehicle for looking back at our culture and different cultures around the country.
Again, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're visiting with author Leslie Bloom about her new book, Let's Bring Back the Lost Language Edition. Just it is what it sounds like, a whole collection of long forgotten yet very useful phrases that Leslie has tracked down. Back to some phone calls here. And Leslie from Leawood, good morning. You're on Up to Date.
Good morning. Good morning. I love this conversation. It's right up my editing alley.
Oh, good.
One that my mother used all the time that I always enjoyed and have used often and used to make my kids knit and furrow their brow was, and now we're cooking with gas. And I'm from, you know, New England area originally. And so I think back to, you know, huge propane tanks in the backyard. And and it must have been a really big deal to switch from whatever, wood probably, or who knows, you know, to gas. I'm just wondering if you ran across that, if you, and I think in our current day and age with such a fondness for gas that, and I mean natural gas, that it would maybe be back in fashion again.
Well, Leslie, what does that phrase mean?
I think it means now we've really, you know, put some elbow into
yes,
it.
Yes, that's how I always took it, yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
Leslie
exactly.
Bloom, yeah.
Oh, and so, other Leslie, that's one of my favorite phrases, and I use that often, and it actually is in the book. Again, you know, as one of those phrases that's not entirely out of use, but, you know, something, you know, that does raise eyebrows with the next generation. I totally adore the phrase. And actually, I first learned about it when I was young from Southern friends. And so for me, you know, for you, it has the propane tank and the backyard connotations. For me, I always, you know, imagine gurgling pots of gumbo that are now, you know, being cooked up with gas, you know. So it means, you know, now we're really moving along. Now we're, you know, we're on the road, you know, that kind of thing. And it's just such a hilarious, you know, optimistic phrase. I really adore it. And supposedly, and everything has to be taken with a grain of salt in terms of, you know, explanations of origins. But I came across an old definition of it that says that it came from an old advertisement for gas stoves, which declared that gas is, you know, faster, easier, cleaner, better than cooking with wood. And, you know, so, I mean, it was a material improvement over, you know, what had
you know, before,
what had come before. And so it was a classic, you know, as we were talking about just a minute ago, it was a classic case of, you know, how even advertising ends up shaping, you know, our vernaculars, you know, in subtle ways, and why, you know, why that ended up being such a rich source of material for me. So,
well,
know, cooking
I have
with
to
gas
ask
is...
one other one, which is very different hue, is my grandfather, who is a salty New England fisherman folk, would say, here's mud in your eye, and toast you happily. I mean, not, but it was here's mud in your eye.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I never figured that one out, but it also raises a few eyebrows when you use it.
Well, I love that. And that, and again, it's so amusingly sardonic, you know, and it's just kind of, you know, everybody, you know, poking fun at somebody being down on their luck. And, you know, it's kind of like break a leg in that category. And, you know, and I just love the idea of this salty old guy, you know.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Leslie. Kathy and Lawrence emails us this at uptodate@kcur.org. My father-in-law would always say, well, cat my dogs, when he would hear something unusual. Any idea of the meaning of that one, Leslie?
I have to say that that one's new to me. I did not come across cat my
dogs.
Well,
cat my dogs.
I mean, it's unlikely. Cats, dogs don't like each other.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's you know, just obviously an explanation of exclamation of you know, disbelief. And, you know, I have actually a whole collection in the book of response. It's a response thing where people say, instead of, well, my goodness, you know, they'll say things like, you know, well, all my eye, and, you know, that kind of thing. And there are all kinds of wonderful old fashioned exclamation responses to hearing unlikely unlikely news.
Yes.
So that's a new one for me, and if I had known about it, it definitely would have made that list.
I like, well, cat my dogs. Let's go to Janet from Kansas City, Kansas. Janet, you're on Up to Date.
Hi, thank you for this show.
Good, you're welcome.
I love words, and I would like to be a wordsmith. But my word that I love is curmudgeon.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband will ask me what kind of mood I'm in today, and I said, you know, I'm just an old curmudgeon today. So that's my favorite word.
Yeah, I hear that one these days occasionally, Janet. Leslie, is that in your book?
It is not, because I hear it a lot also, but it's a wonderfully old fashioned word, and it's one of those ones that had staying power. And again, we don't know why some of them still, you know, make it along into our daily vocabularies, and why some go away. But curmudgeon is definitely great, and we all know at least one of them.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much,
Janet. Thank you.
Thank you,
Jeff from Richmond. Jeff, good morning.
Howdy. How you doing?
Well, Jeff, thanks.
Well, I choose to be a kind of an archaic spoken person in general. I couldn't get through a week or a month without the words horse feathers and hornswoggled. I use both of them regularly. Hornswoggled has to do, it's a common occurrence in today's business climate, I'm afraid. Which brings me to one other little thought.
Meaning hornswoggle, Jeff, means you're swindling somebody, you're tricking somebody.
You've been swindled. I usually use it on the receiving end. I've been hornswoggled.
Ah, okay.
Which
not
brings
again.
Me to the other point, which is there's so many scoundrels in today's world that I don't want to bring back the phrase. I want to bring back the practice. Where's the tar and feathers?
There you go. There you go.
There you go. Thanks a lot.
Jeff, thank you. Appreciate it. Let's go to Lowell from Kansas City, Missouri. Lowell, you're on Up to Date with Leslie Bloom. Good morning.
Good morning. I had a couple here. One would be something being in the cat's pajamas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then the other one would be something going cattywampus.
I've heard that one, too. Yeah, I like that one.
So,
Leslie?
I love both of those. And, you know, the cat's pajamas was one of those amazing sort of animal kingdom inspired accolades from the 1920s. And, you know, instead of saying to somebody, you know, you're the best, you say, you're the cat's pajamas. And so I started looking into different variations on the cat's pajamas from the 20s. And there are dozens of them. So you have, you know, the cat's meow, the duck's quack, the eel's ankle, the oyster's earrings. I like this one, the snake's hips. You're the tiger's spots. You're the elephant's instep. I mean, it's so funny. So people obviously really, you know, when that was at the height of its popularity, cat's pajamas, people really took it and ran with it and came up with a lot of really delightful variations.
And Lowell, what I like about cattywampus is the word sort of suggests what it means. You know, you can it has a lot of suggestive power to it, I think.
It does.
Yeah.
It does indeed.
Thanks for the call.
Well, I don't know what cattywampus is, so I wish somebody would enlighten me.
Well, it's something going obviously far wrong.
Yeah, so. Things have turned upside down or just going nuts, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Lowell, I'm glad you called. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's grab one more call here before a break. Mike from Kansas City, Missouri. Mike, you're on Up to Date.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Sometime in the early 40s when I was a little tyke, my mother, sometimes in exasperation and sometimes in surprise, would say, my stars and garters. Has anybody heard that?
That's garters as in G-A-R-T-E-R-S, the woman's apparel, right? Yeah.
Garters, right.
Mm-hmm. Leslie?
I don't know that one, but I love it. And now I'm starting, you know, all of these new phrases, new slash old phrases are starting to make me think I need to do volume two.
Well, I Googled that one, and I found it, but no real explanation of it.
It's a
well,
great
I think,
one.
You know, yeah, it's so funny. I mean, this sounds like a non sequitur, but it comes back. When I was doing the cocktail edition of Let's Bring Back, and people would ask about the origins of certain drinks, I mean, sometimes they would just get made up by somebody local, you know, who had just a certain way with words, and the term would stay quite localized, and then it would disappear. The drink would be quite a localized affair and then disappear again. And it's really the same thing with words, too. I mean, sometimes they're just, you know, creative off-the-cuff expressions, you know, by nobody famous or anything like that, or you know, it wasn't part of a film or it wasn't part of a book or anything, but it just had, you know, it surged in popularity locally for a little while and then went away. And, you know, sometimes you'll still hear that term turn up, but nobody ever really documented where it came from in the first place. So we don't really know where, you know, some of these totally delightful stars and garters expressions came from, which is frustrating. But it's also, you know, I like the mystery behind it, too.
Absolutely.
Kind of imagine where they came from.
Mike, thank you for the call.
Thank
I appreciate
you.
It. Yeah. Bye-bye. Well, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation here about words from the past, phrases from the past. We'll get phone calls from Reggie, Nate, and Tony, so hang on with me here for just a minute. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're visiting with Leslie Bloom. She's the author of the very delightful Let's Bring Back the Lost Language Edition. It's a compilation of all kinds of forgotten yet delightful words and phrases that have sort of mostly gone out of circulation. Our phone number here, we have a full board of calls right now, 816-235-2888. You can email us, option number 2, UpToDate, at kcur.org. You can also tweet us at kcurUpToDate. Jennifer writes us this: when my son was very young, maybe 3 or 4 years old, he used to say things that made him happy were nice as lemonade. I don't believe this has ever been a popular saying, but it sure seemed like something someone might say in the summer about a cool breeze on a front porch in the South, Leslie.
Oh, I love that.
Nice as lemonade.
Maybe, you know, I think that maybe she has a poet in the making.
Yeah. Let's see. Jennifer writes us this. When my son, I'm sorry, Amy from Lawrence writes this. Jennifer, growing up, I'm getting all kinds of different mixed signals here. Jennifer, when kids were growing up, when us kids got into trouble, my mother used to say, "I'm going to cloud up and rain all over you." I always took this as you are pushing my button, so you better cool down. I like that one too. I'm going to cloud up and rain all over you. Yeah. A few listeners have written to tell us that zounds is pronounced zounds, a shortened form of God's wounds. That makes sense?
Oh, it does. I've heard it pronounced both ways. I like to say.
Yeah.
But yes, that is the origin. It is an abbreviation.
How about the phrase I used in the introduction of the show, afternoon farmer?
Love afternoon farmer.
Yeah.
And that's another one that's a, you know, prime example of us using language from with agrarian roots, and it means, you know, somebody who wastes a great opportunity. You know, so farmers are notorious early risers, you know, tilling the earth and feeding chickens and so on. And so the idea is, you know, those who laze about in bed until the afternoon are most certainly rewarded, you know, with sullen crops. You know, I mean, you have missed the opportunity, the best opportunity of the day to work
your land.
I like
that one. How about this one, after clap?
Again, another wonderful weather-related, old-fashioned term, when something unexpected and unpleasant happens, sort of, you know, after a matter was thought to have been resolved already. So it's like an unpleasant sharp rumble of thunder after the storm has passed, the afterclap. So I really loved that one. And everybody's experienced something, you know, like that. Like, let's say, you know, it's like when you think that you've paid your taxes and then you get a nasty note from the IRS saying, "We're not done with you yet." I mean, it's the least pleasant form of afterclap.
Yeah. Ankle biter.
Another good one. Parents of young children should definitely know this one. It's an amusing old child amusing old term for child. You know, I always imagine an ankle biter being, you know, kind of rambunctious and toothy. And this term was popularized in the mid-1800s. And I always think of, you know, the children's book author Roald Dahl when I hear this. You know, he loved to use the word brat. This really is, let's face it, it's a synonym for brat. Another old term that I came across for children that I quite liked was a chatterbasket.
That's good.
That was, you know, like a little kid who talks all the time.
That sums it up pretty well, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Let's go back to some calls here. Reggie from Shawnee. Reggie, you're on Up to Date. Our guest, Leslie Bloom. Good morning.
Good morning. I was wondering, do you remember the Wizard of Oz? And the wizard on there said something to the effect, "Bust my buttons."
Oh, yeah.
And he also said the horse of a different color. Where did those come from? And I don't ever hear anybody using that. And I'm 50 years old.
Bust my buttons and horse of a different color.
Yeah.
Well, bust my buttons, again, it's another one of those, you know, reaction phrases that we were talking about before, you know, as in, well, cat my dogs.
Yeah.
you know, so I love, again, that's the thing about, you know, once you go down this road, you just come across so many amazing phrases like, you know, like that, that are, you know, fairly... you know, fairly localized, but equally delightful. And so, again, I have a whole roster of similar phrases to bust my buttons. And, you know, so let's say you're hearing, you know, somebody, you know, Aunt Millie just won the lottery. And you'd say, instead of saying, well, isn't that incredible? You'd say, well, heavens to Betsy, or, you know, gee,
yeah.
Hillikins. Or, and then another one of my favorite ones is, you know, well, good night, nurse. Words fail me. My. I mean, there are so many incredibly amusing and sweet and quaint and funny ways to react to astonishing news. Horse of another color. I don't actually know where that came from.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, and I actually didn't include it in the book and I don't know why, but there is actually a ton of old, a lot of old idioms and words that come, you know, from equestrian and racetrack culture.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty,
yes,
it was pretty astonishing the regularity with which those would come up in old slang dictionaries.
You know, Pam in Belton sends us one I really like. She says, points to this phrase, I feel like 2 cents waiting for change. I love that. I think
well,
I catch
that,
the drift
in that,
of that
case,
one.
I like you just need to, you know, wait it out till cocktail hour.
Mm-hmm.
And hope tomorrow is better.
Mike from Overland Park writes us this. My old boss at the Department of Social Services used to say, crying in a bucket. This is my favorite saying, Mike writes. Crying in a bucket.
I guess there's a lot of room for tears in a bucket.
So yeah.
Who cries quite a bit.
Yeah.
Cry baby. Again, just another
yeah.
example of, you know, wonderfully.
And this one we got from in an email here, like a bat out of hell. My dad would often say this if a car passed us going at unusually high rates of speed. God's green earth, usually said like, where in God's green earth is da da da.
I still hear both of those.
I do too.
You know, quite a bit. Yeah.
I was going to say.
I mean, I think you know, bat out of hell. I mean, these again, but these are examples of, you know, phrases that have been around for a long time and people still use them. And the thing that I love about phrases like that, you know, that are so in the ether. I mean, that's the kind of thing where, you know, when you said to your son horse feathers,
yes,
and you know, he raised the eyebrow. I mean, he had never heard of it before. No, he would know what bat out of hell meant.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, with a lot of these, you know, sort of more ubiquitous old phrases, it's curious because you never remember where you heard them for
yes,
the first time.
Yes, yes.
They were just always around you somehow. And everybody just sort of, you know, knows what they are. And there's something fascinating and also like quite, for me personally, I feel like there's something quite comforting.
Yeah, and
that.
It's interesting how many folks are writing in, they're associating some of these phrases with, you know, parents or grandparents or even great-grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing a
of
lot
course.
Of that here, and people associate one with the other very, very closely here.
Well, it's like, you know, with my original Let's Bring Back edition, a lot of the culinary stuff was very popular, you know, and people really related to old, you know, dishes and, you know, old drinks or things that had been served by family members. I mean, they had really close associations, personal, deeply personal associations with those dishes of food, you know, whether it was, you know, ambrosia or,
yeah.
You know, lobster Newburgh or whatever, something from the past. But people have that, you know, those kinds of reactions to old words and phrases as well. And, you know, when, you know, a bit of slang that was said by your grandmother or your mother, it's like if you haven't thought about it for a while,
yes.
then you hear it again. I mean, it could stop you in your tracks, you know, and the flood of memories will come back.
There's also something,
you know, good
about
or good or bad.
Seeing these slogans, these phrases written down. It makes you sort of examine them a little more closely than you would when you just hear them sort of breezing past your ears here. You know, it's they're almost funnier to see them written down like a bat out of hell. Like, what is that?
Oh,
you know?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Let's go back to some phone calls here. And Nate from Overland Park. Nate, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. I think sort of like Bat Out of Hell and wondering, you know, where did that come from? There's a Southern phrase that a friend of mine used a lot, and it was Katie bar the door.
Yes.
And I've always, well, who is Katie, and when, what, you know, what, where does that come from? And, you know, any thoughts there?
Yeah, I don't know the phrase actually, but I will say that there could have just been a Southern edition of this book, and you know, there probably should be, because I mean the roster of colorful expression that comes from below the Mason-Dixon is pretty impressive. a lot of times when there is a name used in an old word or phrase, I mean, it's sometimes you go back and you try to trace, you know, into early definitions, and you know, was this an actual person? Probably at some point it was an actual person. Will we ever know who that person was? Probably not.
Fair enough.
You could write a whole book on it, Nate. You can come up with your own story yourself and write a bestseller.
I'll do
you
that.
You could probably actually write an entire book on one phrase. So I mean, it's pretty incredible, especially, you know, because so many words have so many different incarnations, which is another thing that was really fascinating about doing the research for this book. So for instance, just an example of a word that everybody knows, but it's arcane now, is a groovy.
Mm-hmm. It has lots of different meanings, you point out.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's, you know, most of us know the 1960s version of it, but I mean, a long time ago, it was a sardine. Hmm. Yeah, it was in the late 1800s, I think, or early 1900s. And then...
Who would have thunk it? Yeah.
Who would have thought? And then in the 1930s, that's when it started to take on connotation, or was co-opted, you know, with sort of the, you know, everything's awesome, man, you know, connotations. And it was supposedly a jazz term, like, you know, with a needle being in the groove of a record, everything was going really smoothly. It sounded great.
That's interesting.
And there was a late 1930s definition describing groovy as, quote, a state of mind which is conducive to good playing. And then eventually it became, you know, it stemmed out of the jazz realm and turned into the sort of hippie flower power term, you know, that everybody knows. And just tracing the evolution of words, it sometimes just goes back not just generations but centuries.
Yeah.
And you really could probably even just really concentrate on one and look at all the different cultural contexts, you know, that it went through.
Let's go with some of the more sexist terms in this book. How about the word drumsticks and its partner word gams?
I don't know. Is it sexist to call a pair of great legs drumsticks? I thought it was just hilarious.
And you might be right.
I'll think about that. So obviously drumsticks, an old word for legs, gams, and also wasn't one word that I really quite amused me was gam cases, which was an old fashioned word for stockings.
Yeah.
Then you have spindle shanks, and those are skinny legs.
That's funny.
And then there's stampers. That's legs too. But that word was also used for, you know, for feet and for shoes. So there are a lot of different terms for.
Has anyone gotten fresh with you lately, Leslie?
I live in New York all the time.
Yes.
So getting fresh. That's another one of those phrases that it's not, you know, not obviously entirely extinct, but it's definitely not something that, you know, you would use now for the most part without, you know, getting a second look. And it means to, you know, act in a brazen or an impudent manner.
Yes.
You know, so I've really came across that. I mean, it's a grandmotherly thing, you know.
Yes.
But, you know, I came across it a lot when I was watching old Hollywood films researching this book. And it's the kind of thing that dames always say. You know, they're always dames are always telling louses not to get fresh with me. But you also hear it within the context of, you know, mothers and, you know, fathers telling, you know, their kids who are rude or uppity, you know, don't get fresh with me or you'll get your mouth washed out with soap. You know, that kind of thing. So it's, again, one of those great phrases that I feel like still has a lot of currency today.
Yeah, this one also has a lot of currency today. Has anyone gotten your goat lately? And you just wonder where on earth that came from, because the meaning, it doesn't seem to make any sense, but everyone knows what you're talking about usually.
Yeah, that's one of those great terms where you know that there's a story behind it.
Yes, exactly.
And, and again, as with all explanations of the origins of words and phrases, this is a theory, and not an absolute one. But so it's not agreed upon. But it supposedly comes from getting one's goat comes from racetrack culture,
mm-hmm.
and so apparently horse trainers often used to place goats into stalls alongside racehorses, just because it would calm them down and give them some companionship. And so supposedly, if a rival or an ill-wisher removed the goat, surreptitiously from the stall, the horse might get really upset and then perform badly in the race.
Oh.
So, getting one's goat means, to make somebody angry. Or
that's
to
a
get
great.
Their
that's
skin.
A great story you just told there. That's pretty good for tracking that one down.
Well, let's bear in mind that it's a story.
We don't know how
but it makes all the sense in the world. And that term doesn't necessarily make sense until you hear it within that context.
We're visiting with Leslie Bloom about her new book, Let's Bring Back the Lost Language Edition. It's a collection of forgotten yet delightful words, phrases, praises, insults, idioms, and literary flourishes from eras past. Lots of folks want to chime in here with different ideas. I love this one too, Leslie. Get a wiggle on.
I have to say the 1920s were just one of the most creative times in terms of expression, and that's a 1920s bit of slang, and it just means put some pep in your step, hustle along, get a wiggle on, ladies.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, it's one of those things where it's not like a, a get your goat thing. It sounds like what it means.
How about the word gasser? Because this one sort of made sense to me once I figured out what it was.
Well, everybody knows what a gas bag is for the most part, even though that's kind of a faintly old-fashioned phrase. But gasser means the same thing. It means braggart.
Ah. Back to some calls here. Let's go to Tony from Kansas City, Missouri. Tony, good morning.
Morning, Steve. Leslie. I'm a substitute teacher. I'm in my 60s, and I teach at the high school level, so I have many occasions to get blank looks and rolled eyes when I say something.
Oh, yeah.
But a couple of my favorites here. I've had occasion to call students nincompoops before,
yep.
Or don't be such a nincompoop. And they look at me like, what? They think I've called them something very terrible. And then I tell them what it is, kind of, and then they start calling each other nincompoops for the rest of the day. But I just like the sound of that, nincompoop.
Yes.
And also, for instance, I got $15 back from the Missouri State Tax this year, and I figure that's better than the poke in the eye with a stick.
Yes,
now,
it would be.
That's actually was a favorite of my grandmother, who said, you would always say, you would tell her about how terrible your life was, meaning that you hadn't gotten the toy you wanted for Christmas or whatever, and she would say, well, it's better than a poke in the eye with a sharp stick.
Yeah,
she was fond of sharp. It always had to be a sharp stick or splintery or something. Nincompoop is a great favorite of mine also, and it did make it into the book, and it means
good.
A simpleton or a fool. So this was fun trying to track down the origin of this one, because it seemed that it may have had kind of a lofty origin. So, there are some language experts who say that it was a 17th century term that was a compression of the Latin phrase non compos mentis, mentally incompetent.
Oh, interesting.
But other etymologists, they say that it was a kind of a bastardization of somebody's proper name. So we just don't know. And I do have a suggestion for you. So if you get tired of nincompoop, or if the students have gotten too used to it, there's a sister term called a loll poop, LOLL poop. So it means the same thing.
Well, with the LOL being so popular today, they'll like that probably.
Exactly. So it has both old-fashioned and modern cachet for you.
I did hear another teacher chewing out a student in the hall one day. I was walking by, and she said, "So help me, Hannah, if you ever do that again." And mm-hmm. I thought, boy, that's a flash from the past, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Tony, good call. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
I still use the phrase to shoot the breeze, which is just to chat with somebody, chat them up. What you point out is a synonym for to beat one's gums. And that means what?
Oh, well, it means It's kind of a gross term for beat one's gums, that is. It's kind of a distasteful 1920s phrase for idle chatter. You know,
idle chatter.
Who's talking on and on and on. And again, this is one of those words that, one of those phrases that, you know, definitely still has special value today, especially considering how many private conversations we're privy to via phone,
yeah,
you know, cell phone. You know, we constantly hear people beating one's gums or shooting the breeze. Shooting the breeze is a little bit nicer. It's more, you know, we're, you know, front porch-ish,
yes,
on a summer afternoon. You know, there were an amusing array of words and phrases that I found that related to gossip and to idle chatter.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for instance, we had chatterbox, chatterbasket, you know, those are people,
yes,
who, you know, talk too much. And then my favorite, somebody who talks too much, was a clackbox. Really love that phrase. Really love that. Oh, Lord, what a clackbox. And then another one is a huntabout, somebody who kind of traipses around looking for gossip and spreading gossip. So I really liked that one also.
Cynthia from Overland Park has one of my all-time favorite expressions. Cynthia, are you there?
Yes, hi. I used that phrase in a meeting one time, and they thought I had grown a third eye. And it's, and the phrase was the whole kit and caboodle. And they had no idea what I, you know, and I thought, okay, that's a phrase I've always heard all my life. Another question I have for you, though, have you ever done a study about when a culturally specific phrase crosses over, for example, like when the eagle flies or the 411?
Well, I mean, so many of the hundreds of words and phrases from this book, they're all cultural crossovers in a way. I mean, they all originated, mm-hmm, in one part of the country, or, you know, in one author's text, or, you know, again, in a Shakespearean play. And then, you know, I mean, it's, you know, to hear a Shakespearean term uttered, you know, in a pocket of the Deep South, I mean, that's a cultural crossover. I mean, all slang really comes from a community. At a specific point of time, and it's a community definer in a way. And so when people who are outside of that community are using it, that's the ultimate cultural crossover. So, yeah, I mean, in a way, this entire book is really a study of that.
That's excellent. I have no idea what the whole kit and caboodle, where it came from. I just know it's a phrase. So,
and Cynthia, to you, that phrase means what, Cynthia? It means the whole thing, right? The whole collection.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, right.
I'm kind of astonished that people gave you the third eye look. Yeah. I mean, it just seems, that's one of those, you know, old fashioned phrases that really seems to me to be still in use. But hey, what do I know? I've been so immersed in this world that all these things seem really modern to me. So,
all right. Thank you.
Thank you, Cynthia. Bye bye.
Okay. Bye.
Well, I should just point out that I mentioned also at the top of the show today, Leslie, that you're working on a major biography of Ernest, mm-hmm, Hemingway, and you're looking, mm-hmm, at the events and people that inspired Hemingway's 1926 debut novel, The Sun Also Rises. You know, he's a name that still has so much currency in Kansas City because his writing career began here at the newspaper where,
yes,
I still work, the Kansas City Star. What drew you to this project?
Oh, this is a project that I've been wanting to launch forever, and I've always been a huge Hemingway and Lost Generation fan, and I was doing some research, and I was trying to find out a little bit more about the real-life events that inspired The Sun Also Rises, and not enough had been written on it, and so I thought, I finally got tired of looking for somebody else's writing on it, and now I'm writing it. So in 2016, that book will come out, and believe me, looking at the history of expression, Hemingway and his circle, you know, which included, you know, Ford Madox Ford, Gertrude Stein,
yes,
Ezra Pound,
yes,
F. Scott Fitzgerald. I mean, this is a realm of creative expression, believe me. And a lot of the slang that I've been uncovering during this research has been pretty amazing also.
Well, in a sense, you're recreating Woody Allen's Midnight in Paris, aren't you?
It's definitely a common community, and you know, it's interesting. When I love that movie, and I've seen it quite a few times,
mm-hmm,
and I thought, we've gotten to the point now where Hemingway and Fitzgerald, and you know, especially now with the release of the new Great Gatsby film, you know, coming out this week, people know these figures so well, and I feel like we've almost gotten to the point where the only way that you can discuss them is whether it's, you know, through some kind of a satire like Woody Allen did, or a gentle satire, obviously,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or you know, through some kind of sort of an extravagant interpretation like the Baz Luhrmann film. of the Great Gatsby. But this is a very serious revisitation of that period of time, and it's looking at how these authors and these creative people during this time were reinventing expression.
Wow. Wow.
And language. And things have never been the same since.
Well, Leslie, we're out of time, but you've been such a delightful guest and such a great sport for fielding all these various expressions, some of which you knew, some you didn't, but you just were great. Thanks so much for your time today.
This was so fun.
Thanks, Leslie. That's Leslie Bloom. She's the author of Let's Bring Back the Lost Language Edition. You can find more information about all of our broadcasts at kcur.org. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, and Beth Lipoff. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.